Hello, and welcome to another episode of Power On Podcast Portable. I am one of your hosts, Sushi B, and with me, as always, is the magnificent Murugaru 553, better known as Taylor. How's it going, Taylor?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, Sushi?
I'm doing all right, except for my little slip of the tongue there.
That's all right.
Sorry about that.
5555.
Pretty sad when I can say, never mind, let's just keep going on. So today we have another episode in store for all of our listeners, and it's a pretty good one. And we are looking at the Zone of the Enders franchise.
Yay!
At least the two core games. We are not going to be covering the GBA game.
Right.
And we are looking at the first Zone of the Enders game, as well as Zone of the Enders 2.
Indeedy.
Right, and we are taking our sort of thoughts and feelings on the HD remakes, which have recently come out for the PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360.
That we are.
And potentially for the Vita, maybe. There seems to be no news on that. So if you really want to get this on the Vita, keep your fingers crossed. So anyways, those are the two games we're going to be discussing today. I guess we're sort of having a versus, but not against each other so much as looking at the two games against each other.
Yeah, that'd probably be best, I mean.
Yeah, I think it's a little hard to break it up that way, as we have done in other episodes. We didn't really specify prior to this episode that we were going to do that, so I think it's more
General overview of the two.
Yeah, let's just look at them as in, okay, let's look at the first game, this is how it is, this is the second game, and sort of base our thoughts on that, and then maybe we can kind of choose which one we prefer.
All right.
Now let's do it. So, I guess the best place to start would be the first game, and that was simply titled Zone of the Enders. And it was a PlayStation 2 release that came out, geez, you know, a long time ago now, but what was that, 2001? So quite some time ago now. It was a pretty early PlayStation 2 title. One that a lot of people, from what I understand, I didn't purchase it for this reason, but a lot of people purchased it for the Metal Gear Solid 2 demo. Right. I ended up buying this game used quite a bit after, maybe around just maybe 2002 or something. I don't remember exactly, but I remember getting it used for very cheap because most people had bought it, I guess, for that demo, and then just returned the game. They didn't even bother to really play Zone of the Enders, from my understanding. So,
well, I was one of those that did. So.
Okay, I did too. I didn't. I actually didn't even play the demo for Metal Gear Solid 2. I said probably a lie. I probably played maybe like 15 minutes of or something, and I was like, I'm not really digging this. So, but I definitely played Zone of the Enders for the game Zone of the Enders, not for the demo. And, you know, it was an interesting game for its time. It, pretty good looking showcase for the PS2, especially early in the life.
Yeah, definitely early on. It was really kind of cool to see that and just kind of be in awe. It's crazy to think that that game did come out in 2001.
Yeah.
I mean,
long time ago.
Yeah. So, and it's, yeah. I mean, with the HD, it definitely helps a little bit, but it sure the hell hasn't aged as well.
No, it really hasn't. Some of the lighting effects and stuff have been upgraded and look pretty good. Mm. And some of the sort of drones and other mechanical things in the game look pretty decent. But my goodness, the video quality on those videos, like the full motion videos, are horrendous. They still look choppy and muggy and just, oh, ugly. They just plain look ugly. They're really bad looking.
They're pretty, yeah.
And it doesn't help the character models that are in the game. It's the, you know, the machines and stuff don't look too bad in the videos, but the whole videos just look, I don't know, maybe at the time, I guess we probably thought they looked awesome, but they are really sloppy.
Right, yeah, they look very clunky now, kind of thing. Unfortunately, but I mean, it's just passage of time kind of thing.
Sure. So, you know, that's too bad, but, and it is a bit weird that I wonder if they had a lot of difficulty trying to upgrade it on the HD, and it almost looks like they just said, eh, whatever, we can't even fix these. That's what it sort of felt like. I don't know if that's the case or not, but it didn't look like they did really anything to them, which is possible.
It could be. I mean, I don't have the original version to kind of take a side-by-side look at, so can't really say off the top of my head.
I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't look much different, though. But the in-game stuff looks quite a bit different.
It looks really good.
Yeah, it's pretty sharp.
Yeah.
And a funny thing I read was apparently Kojima still wasn't satisfied, actually, after the game was produced. He still thought it could have been tweaked a little bit more. And I saw, not that long ago, somebody had released a patch for the games, and they had tightened it up even more somehow. I don't know how, but there are things that, you know, as you're playing the game, because this is a very high-speed game, you don't even notice it unless you're completely in standby mode and you're not moving your character at all. Mm. Then you might notice, like, some of the jaggedness in some of the lighting effects and stuff. This person had sort of cleaned that out so that it looks even sharper.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, that didn't bother me because the game is moving so quick all the time. You're rarely in a sort of standby position that you don't really care about that stuff. And I'm not that much of a graphic person where I can really tell the difference all the time. So didn't really bother me. But it was interesting to see the side-by-side that this guy had upgraded the game even beyond what was already made.
Snaps. Yeah, I'm not too horribly pinned up on the graphics. I mean, yeah, you can say they're ugly and stuff, but I'm not gonna, even if they are ugly, they're not gonna be kind of an instant turn off and damper my mood when playing a game kind of thing. Just like, these could look better than Picasso right at this point.
Unless the game looks absolutely horrible.
But... Right.
But no, they did a pretty good job, I think, of converting it for what they had on the table. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so why don't we move on from the graphics? I mean, this is something that's pretty much the first thing you're going to notice. Actually, you and I were fortunate enough to see it in live action when we were standing in line in TGS, actually, in 2012. We were waiting to play E's Memories of Salsetta. And oddly enough, the Konami booth was part of it because they... I forget why they had merged it. Do you remember why?
They have some sort of, Falcom and Konami have some sort of, I don't know what
publishing
kind of
deal or something.
Something. Or... They have some sort of relationship to one another, and Falcom's gotten actually a few little rewards and stuff for the games they've put out recently. And I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Well, 2011 was the same. We also went to the Falcom booth, which was part of the Konami booth as well.
Right.
We're not talking about it. Anyways, in 2012, we were standing in line, and I remember, you know, we stood in line quite a while. So
yeah.
We were having good discussion and conversation, obviously, but there are a few times I know, you know, the conversation dies out, and both of us had our eyes glued to, particularly Zone of the Enders 2 looked really good.
Oh, and I remember we were watching. Damn strobe light.
Oh, God. The lights were just flashing, and we eventually got to near the front of the line for Salsetta. And the people behind us were playing it, and we could kind of watch them play a little bit. And it was kind of neat to see play the little demo, maybe 5-10 minutes or something. But that was at least my first look at the HD remakes at the time. And so that was kind of neat that we saw that, and now we're using that as our basis of a portable. So.
Oh, the things that go on.
Yes, in the world. But why don't we move on to the story for Zone of the Enders and take a little look at that and break it down just a little bit. Personally, I don't want to get too much into it because I think there's story, but you're kind of going into this game for the action. Like, the story is interesting to a point, but it's not really driving you to play the game.
Yeah, it's not.
Particularly the first game.
Yeah. The story for the first game, it's not really, it's definitely I would say the second one's a little bit more interesting, but the first one, it's not interesting at all.
Yeah, it's.
And you're just kind of like, okay, whatever, sweet.
Objective A to B, please. That's all I need.
Right. What do I need to do? Ada, tell me. Okay, thank you, Ada. All right, time to go destroy some ruins. Yeah! That's about
Right. So anyways, this story, though, it centers on a colony that's out in space, and you play as this character named Leo Stenbuck, and he's a young guy, and he stumbles across basically the one of two most powerful sort of mobile suits in the world. And
in the solar system.
In the solar system, I guess. And, you know, he's able to pilot this thing somehow, which doesn't make any sense, but he is able to do it. And people are shocked at this child. He's not quite a child, but he's
young. He's
preteen to teenager or something. 15? Yeah. He's pretty young though.
Yeah.
And he's able to pilot this, you know, super ultimate mega powerful weapon and with pretty much ease. Right. Within the first 30 minutes, he's piloting it, doing 360s and all kinds of wacky stuff. So
that's all you need to really know.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, there's a lot of complaints from a lot of people with his character. I mean, he's kind of whiny and he complains a lot. And
right.
And I agree to a point, but I do like the play between him and Ada. And Ada is the interface of I keep thinking of mobile suit. It's not. It's
Orbital frame.
Orbital frame. Thank you. Of the orbital frame. And the orbital frame he's piloting is Jehuti. And Jehuti is one of the top two orbital frames in the solar system, as you put it. And Ada is the interface for this thing and the AI program that is sort of learning through Leo, which is, I think it was kind of nice. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, like that, it's a cool little thing there because it gives more than just this kind of voice to the program. So it kind of gives it more of a character to it, but. And especially since Leo's so annoying. And like everybody in that game is really not. It's not. You're more so interested in whooping ass with Jehuti than any of the characters.
Right.
Outside
of. I liked Ada though. Yeah, Ada was a cool character. That's saying something that you can make an AI that's the coolest character in the game. I mean.
Well, when you have Leo as your main, it's not too hard.
Yeah. But Leo does play nicely into helping her sort of learn as an AI, and I like that. As much as he is sort of whiny and a bit annoying, it's more so when he's confronting other characters in the game that I dislike. When he's dealing with Ada, aside from his voice acting is not that good, he doesn't bother me as much. Maybe it's because of Ada. Ada's always got these kind of obviously robotic and empty responses to everything he says. Mm-hmm. And the one funny comparison thing that I thought, though, is I really, really, really think whoever helped write the script, whether it's Kojima or somebody else, they probably love Terminator 2. But the whole, like, the Terminator's learning from this young kid about, oh, I can't kill people and all this stuff. That's the vibe I get from Ada and Leo in this game.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of that, I don't know if you've seen T2 in a long time, but there's that whole play of a robot learns to be more like a man, not just, you know, it's not just a killing machine. It's,
I haven't seen that since they abused it on TV so many, many, many years ago.
Well, I don't think it's on TV as much now.
So thank God.
I think you're safe to go back to T2 like and enjoy the wonderful world of T2. It's still a pretty awesome movie, so. So that's sort of the vibe I got, though, like, robot learns from man sort of thing. So, yeah, but yeah, as you said, the story is just, it's there, it's just to push along what's going on, and you're just like, okay, let's do some more objectives. So, yeah.
Let's save some people, okay.
Yeah, so let's move on from that story a bit, and what do you kind of think about the, before we get into gameplay, but what do you kind of think of the setup of the game? So, with this game, you don't really just progress in a linear fashion. You're given this map space, which is the colony, and you're flying across it to different places and moving from one to the next, and you can sort of choose where you'd like to go next. And you can avoid certain spots if you want to.
I like that. Honestly, for this game, I love the backdrop for it. The fact that you have Jupiter just kind of chilling right there.
Right.
It's such it's mesmerizing. It's really a gorgeous kind of thing there. And to have that kind of sitting there and then you go in through this very polygonal.
As you look down on the cubes and squares.
Square. You're like, they made it work. I like how they did that, and it's not just a, mind you, I don't mind that they went linear with two.
Right.
But I like how they kind of did it with the first one here. It's like, okay, cool. You know, it's not really meant to be something that's linear. You have to kind of fumble around to go to these different places for things. So.
Which does make the game a little hard though, because although there are tutorials in the game, the first time I played the game long, long time ago, I got stuck in a part because I had no idea what to do. And because you are able to access different places at different times, and you sometimes need different sub-weapons and things,
right.
That can get a little frustrating if you're not really paying attention that you need to go here or you need to go there. That ends up drawing out the game a little longer than you'd like it to.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I guess.
There's that one part where you have to go to that underground tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then
when you're like infected.
Yeah, and at first I got a little confused as to why I couldn't go in, and I had to go back to another place first, and then I could come back, and you were infected, and then you had to take another suit in, and so it just felt like it was drawing the game out a little more than it needed to. It's not a bad part of the game, but you kind of feel like you just want Jehuti and just to fight. You don't really have concern for this stuff. You're just
because being infected sucks.
Yeah.
One hit kills in that game.
Right. I don't mind the setup. I do, as you said, I do like the sort of scope of the area as you're flying and going to the different spots. Mm. It is a little slow. You can sort of use a booster, but I like the sort of dome that's around it. With a little sort of, almost looks like orange stars, like that sort of cover this dome thing that you're in. Because it's a space colony. I like that. I thought that's kind of cool. But, I don't mind it that it's not that linear, but I probably would have preferred if it was a little more linear.
Okay.
But that's just my thoughts. So, sir, where would you like to move on from there? Why don't you steer this vehicle a little bit?
Let's see. How about just the controls and the gameplay itself.
Sure. I mean,
that's kind of important.
Yeah, for a game that's this fast, it's very important.
Yeah, and you could definitely see that they for what they were trying to go for the first time through, it wasn't too terrible.
Mm.
It was fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if people like Zone of Enders or have even really kind of tried it, but When I first played it all the way back in 2001, it was fun, you know. It was just kind of like, this is cool, this is nifty, you know. You're like in one of those mechs kind of thing, I guess. It's like a mech game, what a mech game could be kind of thing.
Right.
And but it was divorced from all the Gundam mythology and all that, so it's its own kind of thing. And it's like, okay, this is cool. I can dig this. I can enjoy this and play it. It's a little clunky.
Oh, there's some clunky parts, particularly in battle.
Right, it's a little clunky, unfortunately. Yeah,
a little unresponsive at times.
Yeah, and it's probably the big I'm trying to think of what the big issue that I have with it is more so that's like if you get into a fight with other frames, it usually just boils down into like a 1v1 kind of thing.
Right.
And the others just kind of sit pat and wait for you to kill their guy.
They're waiting their turn. It's kind of silly, actually, that they all sort of scout in groups of two or three. And as soon as you start fighting one, the other guy backs off and just waits for the other one to get destroyed. They don't kind of gang up on you, which is really strange.
It's strange, but I think it's probably because it was their first time trying to do a project like it that it ended up being that way. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that.
It could have been some sort of development issue as well, right?
Right.
Or as you're saying, maybe, yeah, they couldn't quite keep the pace of the game at that speed while having multiple things going on at once.
Yeah, maybe they would have to like completely scrap how they were doing the battles and then kind of change it.
It could be.
Controls and stuff, because you have to use the two joysticks.
Sort of. Right.
And you don't normally go up and down.
And that camera is just fidgety as hell. Like, you'll try to face one way and then you'll be like, oh, it's right behind me, and just turn around. And then you can't turn around properly. And the first game has really bad camera issues.
Right. And it's, yeah, that's a big downer, is that kind of the camera thing, and how you kind of move elevation is not up and down, but, you know, triangle and X, so it makes it a lot harder. A
little weird.
Your sub weapons are absolutely useless for the most part, out of situational.
Except for one out of situation. The rest of them.
Well, two. You need decoy and the sniper.
Sniper, I guess, but I think technically you don't need the sniper. I think you can blow that one thing up without it, but whatever. Anyways, particularly one you need.
Right.
If you don't use this particular one, you will die. So. Okay, let's sort of just wrap up with combat then, and then we'll move on to the second game.
Okay.
So the combat in this game we've already touched upon is we get sort of teams of frames that come at you, and usually two or three, depending on what type of frame they are. We have different kinds, and some are really easy to dispose of because they're really lightweight type fighters.
Raptors!
Yeah, the Raptors are pretty easy. They've got like the two little, almost like lightsaber type hands, almost.
Right, they're kind of funny looking.
They kind of look like vultures, almost like kind of robotic vultures, with the way they have this long neck and spine and stuff. And they're pretty easy to dispose of. But then you've got mummy heads. Yes. Oh, geez. Sometimes those things, if they get you in the corner, they have this double laser beam attack that can just take off health like nobody's business. They're really tough sometimes. But luckily for you, you have this sort of power bomb move that you can just bomb them from across the screen, and they can't do anything. So.
Right, yeah, just charged up. I mean, if you do get hit when you're trying to do it, it'll kind of crap out. But
right, but it's pretty easy to get that move off. So.
Right.
But, like, the combat's pretty good. It flows pretty well. The thing is, in this game, you have a sort of small machine gun that's on your hand, which, unfortunately, is actually pretty useless. Like, because other frames also have a shield ability that you have as well, that they can block those bullets. So even if you hit them with maybe one or two bullets, they're more than likely to put up their shield right away and block it. So the gun is not very effective for the most part. The sort of bomb move where you're able to sort of get this fist of power and shoot this sort of ball of energy across the screen can be effective, but not against small, fast units because they're just too fast. They move out of the way. So it can be effective, but it's often not. You have a sort of laser beam attack where you're using your boost that can shoot across the screen. It's effective. Problem is extremely weak. That leaves us with pretty much one weapon in this game, and it's the killer. It's going to be putting a lot of X's on the side of Jahuti for kills, and that's the sword. I mean, the sword is where it's at. You need to use this sword a lot. I mean, once you've perfected that turbo sort of joust move where you just dive at guys with the sword, that's it for everybody. I mean, you can use that spinning burst attack. It can be useful, but once you learn that speed diving attack and you can just basically avoid all shields and stuff, you're set in this game. You don't really need to do anything else.
Pretty much. Well, what did you think of like the bosses themselves in the game?
Oh, the bosses are pretty good. They're challenging. I like the one where you do need the sub-weapon decoy.
Mm-hmm.
Although I died maybe 5 or 6 times because I just couldn't figure it out that I needed the decoy. I had no idea what that was all about.
Mm-hmm.
I like that boss fight. It's challenging. A lot of the bosses are actually pretty challenging in this game. Aside from the main enemies are pathetically easy. So it's a little bit of a sort of odd balance, but Viola can go to hell. Like
Viola's, yeah. Or Viola. Or
whatever her name is. Yeah. I absolutely despise her. She will piss you off. She's just annoying. You have to fight her, 3 times? And she's so damn annoying. Yeah, just thinking about her makes me mad. So,
and
she has the gall to show up in the second game as well. So, even though she dies in this game, I'm sorry if that's a spoiler for anyone, but she dies. So,
like the Well, cause, yeah, because that for the what do you think of how they ended the game? Because it's not a very
abruptly.
It's very abrupt, but it's not a very typical kind of way to end a game. You think you play it, and then all of a sudden, you're just getting rocked.
Oh yeah,
and you just
you get rocked
because the probably maybe the outside of Jehuti, it's the one of the more iconic characters or images in the game is Anubis.
Right. And this is the sort of, this is the yin and the yang, right?
Right.
He is one side and then the Anubis is the other.
And I mean, the first time I got to that, it was pretty cool. Right. Like way back in the day. I was like, holy shit, this thing is awesome.
You're thinking you're going to take this guy on and then
and you're just like, run away kind of thing. You're supposed to like hold off for like 2 minutes or something like that?
Supposed to hold off for a little bit of time. I don't know how long. Maybe a minute. I don't think it's quite two, but it's pretty hard to hold off. So.
Right, but it's cool. I like that.
You gotta get the sword going.
I like that though. It's kind of like, you know, you for a final, for the game, for the final boss of this, it's kind of like you're not whooping ass. You're just trying to stay alive kind of thing. Right. I thought that was a nice little twist to typical kind of boss fight.
This is after you've already had a grueling battle with the Bylaws.
Yeah.
So when you get to this, you're like, oh man, I've already got so little health as it is and whatnot. And then you're kind of thankful that you don't have to fight this guy actually, because he smokes you. So
right.
He's tough.
He's got all these capabilities and you've got none of them.
You've got a sword.
You got a sword and you can dash. And
that's about it.
And he can pretty much avoid everything. So,
right.
Just kind of like, you're just trying to hold out, which is
right. Fair enough. Well, why don't we take a look at the second game then? So this second title would be Zone of the Enders, the second runner.
Anubis.
Right. So it follows shortly after the first game. We don't really get much of what's going on at the beginning of the game. You're just kind of dropped in basically and you're kind of confused. I remember I borrowed this game from a friend after playing the first game and I didn't finish the first game, but I was just assuming the second game would start kind of similar, but it doesn't. It drops you in right away and you're just like, well, okay. I'm in this weird mechanical suit that vibrates aggressively for some reason and walks extremely slow in the snow. And, so you get dropped in and the second game, I think that's just the telling sign of what's to come. And the second game is brutally hard pretty much the whole way through.
It's a fun, the hard though.
Yeah. It's not
an enjoyable difficulty.
Anger. Like you will get angry, but you won't just want to completely give up the game.
Right. I think it's a good challenge. It's not like, cause the first one isn't right. The first one isn't so bad.
It's except for the bosses, the first one's pretty damn easy.
Well, yeah. Even some of the bosses are kind of easy in the first one.
Yeah.
To an extent. Some of them are a little tricky, but the second one kind of like, nah, yeah, that first one was just, as an appetizer. Time to sit in and kick some ass kind of thing.
Right. Or get your ass kicked a lot.
And I think it helps that it kind of transitions from Leo being the pilot of Jehuti to good old Dingo.
Right, a more experienced sort of military man, if you will, who's right. Sort of given up the cause because of his own personal reasons and such. So. Mm.
And so it kind of delves into that as well as going into more of like who the hell is actually piloting Anubis and what's right. Actually going on Mars all of a sudden.
Right, you've moved to Mars. And the only thing about the second game is the story gets really confusing fast. That's the thing. It brings in too many elements too quick.
And if you're not paying attention, you'll be like, what's going
right.
on?
Right, and it's a pretty short game. Both of them are. It's a pretty short game, so you're getting a lot of information in a very short span, but
right.
A lot of it's going over your head because they're just bringing in so many details upon details upon details. I don't mind it. I just felt a little confused a lot of the time that I sort of gave up after a while. I just thought, okay, the main objective here is Dingo wants to fight this guy because of this. And that was all I had to kind of know. Yes, there's like, and this battle's going on and we need to stop these guys because they're taking over the planet and they want to destroy this colony and such. But
right.
Suddenly all these other characters just start getting dropped in and they're, hello, I'm from the 17th fleet. And it's like, okay, get out of here. I don't need you. I've got Jahuti. So we get some characters like that, but Dingo's cool. Dingo is sort of forced into using Jahuti though. He's not really too keen on being a part of the battle again. He got out for a reason and
right.
He's dropped back into this frame and he's, we can kind of spoil it a little bit, I guess. His heart's going to crap out basically if he doesn't pilot Jahuti.
Well, yeah, it's really early on, but he gets gunned down by, Norman?
Right.
So.
And he's blackmailed.
Right. And so, yeah, he's kind of forced into this by kind of being connected to Jahuti's power system.
Right.
So if
good old
he
Ada.
Tries to, yeah, if he tries to hop out, he starts dying.
He starts to cop out.
So that's his way of kind of keeping him in the most literal cockpit in gaming history, and it's also kind of because they do that really early on, it kind of, okay, you got to take out this asshole, and this asshole happens to be the one that is piloting Anubis.
Right.
Kind of thing, so.
All right. So that's a decent look at the story. Now the presentation of the story is done a little bit differently too in this game where we get a little more anime look to the characters instead of going for the full motion video.
Right, and I think it helps a lot.
It helps a lot, and particularly with this set of games on the PlayStation, or if you have the Xbox version, it looks so much better. Like, it fits so much better. It runs a lot smoother. The only thing is, again, it gets a little long-winded at times where you're just looking at these two characters talking, and they're not really doing anything.
Right.
That can get a little bit boring, but as a whole, the presentation is a little bit better.
Just their reactions and their animations are a little
dull.
Well, overdone. Yeah. Like, okay. Well, some
I
of Dingo's
dull, but
well, some of Dingo's looks when he's like angry or something just looks really stupid.
He pretty much has one eye, so he doesn't have a lot to work with.
So I meant more of his face and his jaw kind of thing.
Right, but half of his face is covered by his hair is what I'm thinking too. So he doesn't have a lot of space to work with to show emotion. And he's a pretty angry man most of the time. Not Kratos levels angry or anything, but he's pretty angry most of the time.
I don't know if you knew this or not, but if after Ada says anything in the game, if you press down, if you do the L3 or the R3, if you press down on the joysticks, the L3 will give like a positive response, but if you press the R3, it'll give a negative response.
I had no idea about that.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so like, if you press the I just did the positive ones just so I could be a positive person. But, if you do like the negative ones, he's just kind of like, this is fucking annoying. Why am I doing this kind of thing? And the positive ones are like, come on, bring it on, next one. You know,
I didn't know that. He just pretty much, had the stationary face or just listening and talking. So I didn't know.
Well, this is in battle and stuff. So.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So. Interesting. All right, well, let's sort of look at the combat then. Let's kind of see how it compares to the first game.
Hot diggity damn, is it a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's very tough. Even weak enemies can pretty much hand you your butt if you're not careful. Kind of like how the Ninja Gaiden reboot games have gone too, where you really got to know what you're doing. If you make a mistake, you're going to get punished pretty badly.
Right.
So you got to be careful. You got to learn how to use your sub-weapons. Finally, they got the sub-weapons right in this one. There still are a couple of sub-weapons that are not so good, like that one javelin thing and stuff, still pretty poopy. But a lot of them are actually
nice.
Useful.
Geyser's really nice. The kind of like one of the first ones you get that pins it in place. Because you can also now grab in the game.
Right.
Which helps a lot. So
is Geyser the fist move?
Geyser's the one where it has, where if you
throw
where
it holds them,
kind of,
right.
Yeah, it pins
the beams of light come out.
Yeah.
That one's really good. I like the fist, I can't remember the
Gauntlet?
Or something.
Yeah, Gauntlet.
That's really good too. If you punch them and say you're surrounded by guys and you punch two or three of them away, they go away from you for a little bit.
Right.
And kind of defend yourself. That's the other thing is no longer are you fighting just one enemy at once. Now there's all sorts of little drones and stuff that fly around and you can target with your lasers to knock out of the sky. Mm-hmm. And they like to gang up on you now. They will have two, three, four, any number of different frames coming at you at once. And you've got to be really fast thinking to be able to move out of the way, block certain attacks, use the sword spin. Just, you've got to be really careful.
Right. And yeah, you can't just Leo it and
keep spamming that one sword attack. You still can quite a bit, but not to the same effect.
They also, with the enemy groups, they've added the commander for some of the certain instances. So you'll have to take out like a commanding orbital frame, because if you don't, they work very, very well in tandem.
Yes, they do. Once you take out the commander, they're easy pickings though.
Right. Well, I thought that was kind of cool though. Yeah.
No, I like that too. I thought that was good.
A nice kind of twist to, instead of just, okay, here's some more orbital frames, slaughter them. Hey. They did that. Like they had them in the first one too, but the fucking Cyclopses. I hate those. They're just so, cause they do the stupid punch and you just, each time they swing at you, you just want to take off their heads.
Right. They do a lot of damage.
Yes, they do.
They're tough.
That wave, like that sonic boom kind of attack too, that knocks you back. Ah.
Yeah, they're tough. We also have some sort of generators now in the game that can keep making more frames, which is also very tough, difficult. You have to sort of go for them first, if possible, which can be really hard. The targeting in this system of this game is better, much better, and so is the camera. But because so much is going on the screen, sometimes you can't focus on particular things very easily. Hmm. And sometimes that will cost you and you will die.
Now, we kind of mentioned this before. I think it's kind of cool because you have all of these things going on at once that your auto track is going bonkers.
Right.
Like, to me, I think it's kind of cool. It gives it more of a quote unquote realistic vibe of what
it does. It does, but it can be.
It's annoying as hell. Of course. Yeah.
As much as you're playing a realistic game, it is still a video game. So.
Right. I know, and some people might. I guess I'm trying to turn that turd into something much better. Polish that turd.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I thought it was kind of cool. And okay. It can be aggravating, especially when you're trying to save Levs from... but anyway.
The second game can get a little repetitive, though, too. I mean, the first game suffered from that a lot. And the second game has it, but the second game at least provides a few more different mission objectives. You will have to do a lot of the same battles of, okay, you're going to go through this zone and do this and this and this and just keep fighting. But they were clever enough to add some really cool battle sequences and even stuff like staying low on the ground and trying to avoid mines or fighting a full armada that's coming at you, coming at Mars and stuff. And you know, it's a challenging game, but they also throw in some nice blended new ideas that spice it up a lot.
Right. Yeah. The boss battles are definitely, or at least some of these kind of scripted battles are definitely different from the first one. Yeah. The train. Are really, really cool. Yeah. The train's nice.
I like the train.
The train's a good one. That one's
train's cool because you're moving at such a quick speed that when you hit some frames, they can't catch up to you again.
Right.
Which is pretty neat.
Yeah. So, and then you just kind of wave to them bye-bye.
Yeah. And then they just blow up. It's like, yeah.
Okay. I really like the Armada fight. That one with the fleet is such a cool fight. And the music, the music is a little different in Zone of Enders 2 because they use a lot of the Beyond the Bound.
Mm.
They use that song differently throughout the game. And I just really like that song. It's a bit repetitive song, but I just really like that song. So hearing that throughout the game, you're just like, yeah, you know, kind of thing. And at that point, it's kind of playing like a non-vocal version of it, and so you're just like, oh yeah, this is time to get serious. And it is slightly difficult if you don't know what you're doing. The first time you play it, you are going to have troubles with it.
Oh, the Armada?
Yeah, because there's so much. Oh, man, Nirmada's
hard. Yeah, that's really hard.
It's so much going on, and then you're like, you get these danger things, and then you're getting hit by beams. And
giant laser beams that can kill you in pretty much one shot. And I think I probably did the Armada 10 times or something, because I was just constantly getting caught by one laser beam or whatever, or just tough. It's a tough fight, but I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's a fun one. Like, and then you have to do some things different with the last remaining ones, where the first couple you can just kind of just destroy
head on,
right? But then they kind of like, well, shit, we need to start
basic maneuvers.
Yeah, and so you have to take out everything and just kind of
still, it's good though. Viola can get the hell out of here again. She can go to hell again. Why do they have to bring her in this game too? I mean, I do like that they sort of introduced her, and she's not just boss battles. They sort of used her as a way to help teach you how to use some different things in the game. But still, that doesn't make it any more viable to have her in this game. She should have been dead after
this. It was just the AI. It was
still annoying enough, because now they could put her in the third game if they ever make it, to be like, oh, the AI came alive again, even though you disinfected it. And so she's frustrating in this game. She really bothers me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's also kind of a way to connect Dingo to everything, it feels like.
A little bit. Yeah. But I mean, his connection to the first game is Anubis, which is a mystery in the first game. So
right.
I think there are other connectors there too besides Viola. I think Viola is not that much of a connection for him, honestly. She is, but not that much. He knows she's not alive anymore, so I guess he speaks to her as if she's alive though too. So, but anyways, so what else do you want to kind of sort of wrap up with? Anything else?
The characters aren't nearly as annoying. I don't find Ken as annoying.
Ken's okay. Yeah, she's when she's falling and you've got to pick her up from flaming hot lava and stuff, she's annoying, but otherwise...
Well, her voice isn't that bad in the Japanese one, so...
I don't mind her as
I actually like that. That was kind
Anubis of... is pretty cool. You get some pretty cool battles with Anubis. Really tough. I mean, we talked about the sword being so dominant in the first game. It's less dominant in this game, but for the boss battles, you have to learn properly how to use this sword. Like,
right.
Sword play for just certain strikes and stuff, and I don't mind it. I liked it, but it also led to a lot of frustration. I'm just going to be completely honest. I died a lot in this game. I probably died 40 or 50 times.
Ooh,
that's just a guess. I mean, it could be less, but if I had to guess, it's probably 40 or 50 times
it
I died.
It says it at the end when you use continues, or if you.
Oh yeah, I don't even remember. I did play this game a little while ago, so. I just remember the last battle is pretty tough.
No, the last battle is easy. The last battle, the penultimate fight in the warp.
Yeah.
Kind of, that's a little tough. But
that's right. That's what I'm thinking. The warp area is really tough.
Right. It's tough, that's a lot of time. It's like the culmination of all of the skills you're supposed to learn throughout the game, because you have to use the boost at a certain point. You can't just always be using it and all that kind of stuff. Right. You can't. The
big giant red laser beams coming at you. And
right. And when you first play it, you're going to get frustrated.
Oh, you're going to get crushed few times probably.
Because that thing takes off nearly a quarter of your health.
Oh, yeah. It's tough.
And it's tough, but it's a cool fight. And
it's a cool fight, but
at the point you have this new skill, it's probably it's a pretty beastly thing. It's the zero shift.
Zero shift, which essentially means you can move at the speed of light.
Right, it bends space and time to the point where you can move faster, or at least look like you're teleporting.
But also, the only weapon you have is your sword, and that at this point,
right,
you've lost all your weapons.
You're now to damage Jehudi, and then naked Jehudi at the end of it, kind of.
Right. So it's a tough battle. It's a cool battle. I probably died, 10 times doing that battle. And I was getting frustrated, but I still felt so satisfied after I did it. I was like, oh, I did it.
In your face, Anubis.
Right. You beat me 10 times, but I beat you once. That's all that matters, because I get to see the ending now.
Exactly.
But I do like the second game, as frustrating as it could have been at times for me. But it was still good.
Yeah, I really enjoy the second one, and it's just, it's a lot of fun. It is a little more challenging, but it's a lot, the movement, the controls are a lot better than the first one.
Mm.
I mean, even though they do have some of their own flaws, but they're a lot better, and it's just a very fun game. And, you know, you can play through it again with all of your stuff and just decimate.
Nice. Anything else you want to sort of cover there?
I don't know.
No? Well, I've got something short that we can do, and it is the 10 Degrees of Taylor. And we're actually only going to do two things for the 10 Degrees of Taylor this time. And that is, we're just going to sort of rank the first and second game's main characters. So we're going to rank Leo, and we are going to rank Dingo. And we're going to kind of put Jehuti out of this, because if we put him in, it's a little unfair, because in the second game, he does have a few more power-ups and stuff and a little easier to use, so it wouldn't be really fair to judge them that way. So we're only kind of looking at the characters of Leo and Dingo and how they are used in the story and what they do. That's all we're doing. So no designs of them. It's pretty obvious that Dingo's design is a lot better than Leo's. Leo's is very, very generic, so we're just going to look at sort of their role in the story and what they do. So let's start with Leo.
Is piloting ability included?
No, because I think that what they do, I think that sort of plays too much into how Jehuti is used in the game. So
fair enough. Well, outside of really helping Ada find herself as a as an AI, Leo can bite a big one. I don't like Leo very much. I it's one of those tropes that I just don't like. I'm not the biggest fan of, here is this savant-like character, and they have to deal with, you know, this, you know, trying to save pseudo-girlfriend slash, what about my family? Oh, my daddy doesn't love me, or oh, mommy doesn't love me. When it's at that time and age kind of thing. Ah, no.
The coming of age.
The coming of age kind of, yeah. And he totally takes it like a beta fish loser. All right, boy.
So what does loser boy get then for a score of 1-0 to 10?
Solely because he helps Ada, I would throw him a 4. Oh, I'd give him a 4.
Being generous, I see. I'm going to give him a 5. Yeah. I don't hate him that much, but I certainly don't really feel like the story is motivated by him. As I already mentioned, I do like his interplay with Ada. It really helps the Ada character shine through a lot more. So I'm going to give him the extra point that you're going to not give him. So,
well, yeah, he is not pushing it forward. It's the everything else is kind of guiding.
Right. Everything's happening around him, and he's just sort of the victim. Right. All right, so what about Dingo then?
Dingo's a BAMF. What else is there to it? I mean, not only does he get shot a few times, he's able to bag himself a nice pair of space titties and
pilots Jehuti like a man.
The whole I'm out of it kind of thing, but I have to do it because of this. I don't care for as much. I'm just like, he does have some nice little kind of quips with some of the other characters, which is pretty funny. Like when Ken's confessing something, he's like, yeah, it was pretty obvious. What you said was totally lying, but you know, why'd you lie to me? Kind of thing.
He's very upfront and abrupt. He doesn't really beat around the bush too much.
Right. Yeah. He knows what he is and he's confident in himself.
Kind of, right? He sort of
he's scarred.
Yeah. He's scarred, but he sort of relearns the things that he did. Like he didn't want to be a soldier anymore, but then he's kind of come to the realization that that's what he is and that's what he needs to do. And so he does have this sort of, this moral compass that is a little goofy at times where, you know, you're like, okay, there's this giant battle going on and he's just like, well, there's some guys out there, they were like my guys, so I gotta save them. And it's like, that sounds a little goofy more than just saying full on, I don't want people to die. And he's just like,
oh well, yeah,
these guys are like my boys. And I'm like, you don't know them.
They're probably trying to avoid that because that's a very common thing. I don't want anybody to die. Even though he does kind of pretty much say that. I don't want anybody to die. And you're just kind of like, okay. Yeah, in that regard. In that regard, it's a little hump. But for the most part, he's like, okay, whatever. I'm kind of stuck eating this very large shit sandwich, so.
I'm gonna digest it and I'm gonna shit it back up.
pretty much. So I personally like him definitely a lot more than Leo. There are little bits of dialogue and scenes where it's kind of dumb, but I don't know. I would give him I'd at least double it for him, so he gets an 8 for me.
Fair enough. I'm going to give him an 8 as well. That's the exact number I was thinking for good old Dingo there. Pretty good character for the most part. We should touch upon very quickly before we wrap this all up is that Leo does come back, though, in the second game.
And he's a much better character.
Yeah, he's a much better character. He's a lot cooler. And I think in a little bit of the way that, you know, we give Leo a bit of a low score for the first game, he is a touch of that, it comes from being a victim of circumstance. He is part of a bit of a weaker game when you're comparing the first and second game in a lot of ways. I don't know if that is justification for him not being as good a character. Probably not. But when you're playing the second game and he comes along, he is a lot more likable and he's piloting the Vic Viper, which is just such a cool nod that Konami did for this game. It's a really cool nod.
Right. It's a pretty spiffy orbital frame, right.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It turns into the Vic Viper, and then it changes into its orbital frame suit battle mode and stuff. That's pretty cool. And he's even got some of the special moves, right? He shoots the ripple and stuff. It's pretty cool. He's got the laser shot and stuff, too. So really, really neat little nod by whoever, I don't know who, sort of passed that through along to the Zone of the Ender series, but I think that's a really cool idea that they added to the game.
Yeah, it's very nifty. Yeah.
So that's probably going to be it then, I guess, for this. Hey, so it sounds like we're both probably going to agree that the second game is a lot better in a lot of ways. Not to say that the first game is bad. I don't think people should just completely skip the first game.
Even though a lot of people did.
Even a lot of people seem to have done so.
Well, a lot of people did say, just skip the first game.
It seems like a lot of people skipped on the second game because of that. The second game is pretty hard to find now on the PlayStation 2 in most regions. I don't know about Japan, but I know in North America it's pretty hard, and I think in Europe it's very hard to find as well. So this is sort of your chance to give it a shot if you've got a PlayStation 3 or a Xbox 360. It's a pretty cheap game now. I think it's not going for too much, so it's worth looking into. It could lead to a third game. No one knows at this point. It's been sort of hinted at for years, and it's never come about, so it's hard to say. But you're still getting two pretty quality games here for, you know, your collections.
Yeah, like, honestly, they are a bit on the quick side. Kind of brought that up. Like I don't quite remember how long it took me through the first one. I did the first one a little bit longer than the second one, just because I was dicking off a little bit more. But I seriously beat the second one in about six and a half hours.
So. I think I beat both games together about 14 hours, and that's because I was playing very poorly. So if I played them again, I'd probably do it a lot faster, maybe 10 hours for both games I could see happening. Yeah. So most people seem to say that the second game is a little bit shorter. Personally, I had difficulty with it, so it took me a little longer. But yeah, you're not looking at very long games. So if that's what you like, this would be a great package to pick up. But also being said, you might want to pay a little less money because of that. So.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, it all depends on how much you value fun, I guess, kind of thing. Well,
value punishment.
If you're enjoying the game, if you enjoy both of them, sure, you probably pay a little bit more than somebody who's like, it was okay, you know, kind of thing. So, you can go through the second one over and over again. So you can, and you have all the EX missions and stuff, and there's the whole verse thing and everything. So there's just, I would say if, you know, you don't have tons of free time, but you want to try something different and you never got around to playing it, I would suggest picking this up and giving it a go.
I would too.
So.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's our look at the Zone of the Enders HD collection, or Zone of the Enders 1 and Zone of the Enders the Second Runner. Woo-hoo. All right, so thanks for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and you can look forward to another portable very soon. So until the next time, have a good one, and we'll see you soon.